Never go to the second location. Always trust your gut.
Hello, my name is Chrissy Champagne, and you are listening to Residue, a true crime podcast dedicated to keeping you paranoid. Residue is the true crime podcast that tells you the truth behind your favorite movies, and today we are talking about a Lifetime made-for-TV movie directed by none other than Courteney Cox, Tall, Hot, Blonde. This is another one of those stories that is so messed up, it's going to piss you off beyond belief. And as the OGs know, the Resi crew, this show, Residue, is produced, edited, hosted, created, written, all the things by me. I'm doing it by myself, so I'm really trying to get these episodes out to you. Coming soon, we have I Know My First Name is Steven, Boys Don't Cry, Heavenly Creatures, An American Crime, and Party Monster is on the way. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram at Residue Podcast, TikTok, Residue, a True Crime Podcast, and Facebook, Residue, a True Crime Podcast. And as you know, the greatest thing you could possibly do to help out the show is leave a positive review. That would mean the world to me. Okay, now it's time to talk about a real piece of shit. Here we go. Tall, Hot, Blonde. Tall, Hot, Blonde is a 2012 American made-for-television film that premiered on the Lifetime Network. It's a dramatization of a real-life internet love triangle that ended in murder, essentially a true crime cautionary tale about online deception, obsession, and the deadly consequences that followed. This film marked Courteney Cox's long-form directorial debut. This story follows Thomas Montgomery. He's a middle-aged machinist and father who becomes dissatisfied with his life and escapes into online poker and chat rooms. And there, he meets a mysterious user with the screen name Tall Hot Blonde. So along with the Courteney Cox-directed Lifetime movie, there is also a 2009 documentary of the same name, Tall Hot Blonde, and it is directed by Barbara Schroeder. And this doc has many interviews with law enforcement, with Thomas Montgomery himself, and with family members. So in the Lifetime movie, they did change the names of two of the characters. They also changed the location of where these two characters lived. And Courteney Cox not only directed the film, but she also appeared in the film as well. She was a friend of Thomas's wife, Carol. She was a confidant. So there was a review of Tall Hot Blonde written by Jennifer Boudinot, and this was for the HuffPost, and I wanted to read it to you guys because I thought it was a really good review. And she writes, "We're all tall, hot blondes on the internet." And she goes on to say that she was really concerned that this movie wasn't going to be that good because it was directed by Courteney Cox, and she was a little iffy on it. But she said, to her surprise, Court really came through. Tall, Hot Blonde was actually much more watchable than most Lifetime movies in terms of dialogue, pace, and even a convincingly suspenseful score by Sacha Baron Cohen's brother, Aaron. Luckily, it was still completely ridiculous and awful, as all Lifetime movies should be. And just to hop back on over to the 2009 documentary, Tall Hot Blonde, that documentary starts with the words, "This true story I'm about to tell you starts with a lie." In 2006, 46-year-old Thomas Montgomery, a married father of two, is working at a company called Dynabraid Factory near Buffalo, New York. A completely mundane, boring job, according to Thomas. He wishes he could do something more exciting, but he just never left this company because the pay was too good. He felt like he was too old to start over. He might as well just stay and put up with it until retirement. Now, Thomas, he always wanted to be a Marine ever since he was a kid. And he made that dream come true. In his younger days, he joined the military, but he wasn't in the military for very long. When he left, he had a severe drinking problem. But Thomas soon becomes a family man. He's a husband with two daughters. He has a beautiful home in upstate New York. He has a fine job that's paying him well. He's just really bored. He is a model citizen. He even taught Sunday school. He participated in all of his kids' activities, even coaching. Neighbors loved him. They said he was a great guy. People said he seemed a little awkward at times, but he was a nice guy and he seemed like a good father. But what they say is he appeared to be a good man because, as we say here at Residue, you never truly know what is going on inside of your neighbor's home. Thomas's marriage was in trouble in 2006. He said he became impotent and he didn't know what to do about it. He even went to speak to the ministers at his church about this, got some therapy to figure out what to do. And they told him, you know, you're going to have to talk to your wife about this. So Thomas knows he has to communicate with his wife, Cindy. He told her that he's just having some trouble, you know? He needs a little more sex in his life. And he did say sex isn't the only thing in a marriage, but it is an important part. He loves every other aspect of their marriage, but his sex life is lacking and he just kind of wanted his wife to step it up a bit. But he admits that when she would try to communicate with him about what her problems were, he would never listen. He was always on a one-track mind. He thought only about his own issues, his own problems, and he wanted sex and he wasn't satisfied. So Thomas turns to online gaming as a different addiction. And he starts to get into online gaming in the poker rooms. And, you know, this is the early days with AOL chat rooms. He is in these rooms making new friends, and now he's more addicted to gaming, and he's not thinking as much about his sex life. But that is until one night he is in this room playing poker, and he strikes up a conversation with a person whose screen name was Tall Hot Blonde. I mean, obviously, this guy who's not getting it from his wife sees the name Tall Hot Blonde. He's like, okay, I mean, come on. So cliche. I love it. So he's in this room. He sees Tall Hot Blonde on the screen and he was playing blackjack. And all of a sudden, Tall Hot Blonde starts chatting him up. She tells him that he is in the wrong room. This is a room for kids. Also, did they have poker rooms for kids? That's so strange to me that they would have a separate room. Come on over, kids, play some poker. Let's gamble a little bit. So anyway, Thomas lies and says, no, I'm in the right room. I'm 18. And immediately, these two are striking it up, striking up a conversation. And immediately, she's sending him pictures of herself. She's like, oh yeah, my screen name's Tall Hot Blonde, but I'm going to prove it. And you know what? She was a Tall Hot Blonde. He is receiving pictures of Tall Hot Blonde in a bikini, you know, nothing super provocative. It wasn't like they were getting down and dirty right away. It was just like pictures at a pool, pictures at the beach. It is pretty aggressive to go from blackjack to look at me in a bikini. So this chick is sending him pictures and she's like, I want to know what you look like. You got to send me a picture now. And he does. He first tells her, though, you know what? I am 6 foot tall. I have these broad shoulders. He was like really proud of his broad shoulders. He's very muscular. And so he sends her a picture, a 30-year-old picture of him back in his military days, dressed in his Marine uniform. So Thomas's screen name was Marine Sniper. He tells Tall Hot Blonde that his real name is Tommy. So now Thomas, the 46-year-old man, has developed this alter ego named Tommy, who's 18 years old and he just joined the military. And Tall Hot Blonde's real name was Jessie. And Jessie was an 18-year-old girl, beautiful. She was. She was tall, hot, and she was blonde. And she liked sports. She was very athletic. She liked softball, basketball. She told him that she was from a small town in West Virginia, that she lived in this rundown home with her parents and her brother, and she was just completely unsure about her future. she started calling Tommy her sweet, sexy Marine. And they start sending each other gifts. Like, these two are getting it on quick. They are falling for each other, like, really quick. So Jesse, the beautiful 18-year-old, thinks that Tommy is also an 18-year-old with, like, rippling muscles. And so right away, Thomas decides, you know what? I'm bored in my life. I'm bored in my marriage. My job sucks. I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna flirt with this 18-year-old girl because there's no harm in it. You know why? I'm never gonna meet her. And now I can have this alter ego, Tommy. And he felt that Tommy deserved this. This was his ultimate fantasy. So Thomas, the 46-year-old married man with two daughters not that far from the age of 18, decides to go along with this because what the hell could ever happen? Meanwhile, his wife is, you know, cooking, cleaning, making sure the kids get their homework done, getting the kids to bed. Thomas just sitting on that computer. Thomas is over there living out his fantasy life and his wife has no idea. So Thomas's wife is just here trying to keep the family afloat, and he's over here receiving gifts from this 18-year-old. She's sending him things like, you know, those best friend necklaces. You take one half, I'll take the other. Has their names on them. He took the Jesse half, and she took the Tommy half. Tommy and Jesse forever. She sent him panties in the mail. And then they would IM each other and describe what he was doing with her panties. And I thought that I would read you a couple of these IMs. So I imagine that the family computer is just in a very available room for everyone to see. And I always picture Cindy just in the background making dinner for everyone, or Cindy asleep getting ready to have a good night's rest before she has to get up for work and get her kids ready for school. And there's Thomas just in the light by the computer typing away to his new 18-year-old girlfriend about her red silk panties. So they're typing back and forth. Tall Hot Blonde says, I will run up and wrap my legs around you. Marine Sniper responds, wear your red silk panties. And Tall Hot Blonde says, lift my skirt up because I don't care who sees. So these are some of the tamer messages that these two are sending each other, just to give you a little idea about what they're discussing. I'm going to warn you right now, and I'm not going to read these particular ones, but Thomas, he is a huge fan of the N-word. When he starts to get angry with Tall Hot Blonde, with 18-year-old Jesse, Thomas just lets that N-word fly out of his mouth like it's the word the. It really pisses me off. And I cannot stand reading those, seeing those. So if you watch the Tall Hot Blonde documentary from 2009, I watched it on Prime, just in case you're looking for it. They show all of these messages, and that was my main source for today's episode, but some of them are just so vile and disgusting. So at this point, Thomas is creating all of these elaborate stories so that he had all of these excuses set up so he couldn't go to meet Jesse. Like, if she asked him to come to her house in West Virginia, he would be like, oh, I can't. I'm being shipped off to Iraq that week. I'm sorry, babe. Or, oh, I gotta finish boot camp. He says, I always wanted to be a Marine and test my skills. And doing this with Jesse let me live this whole other life I knew I could never really live. Thomas starts to create an even more elaborate story for Jesse. So he's telling her he's at boot camp, but he's not. He's sitting at home with his wife and his two kids, and he really still wants to talk to his little girlfriend. So he starts telling her that he's Tommy's father. And he's getting on Tommy's account right now, and he's just trying to talk to Jesse and tell her, you know, I just wanted to tell you that Tommy is away at boot camp, but he does miss you. And this was a way for Thomas to still keep in touch with Jesse and keep his lies going. He also says that he was trying to end this affair, and that in his own way, posing as Tommy's father. So what is he? So he's posing as Tommy, who's posing as Tommy's father, to end this affair. It doesn't make any sense, Thomas. There's no way Thomas is going to be able to end this little online affair he's got going on because he is completely infatuated. And one of the detectives on the case said that Thomas was like a teenage boy, except He was 47. And this whole thing was a drug to Thomas. And while this is going on, his little secret affair, he's arguing more than ever with his wife. So this affair has been going on for about 6 months. And guess what? Tommy, he asked Jesse to marry him. Yeah. And in Thomas's mind, he's still thinking, it's fine. Jesse's never going to get hurt because this is just fantasy. This is just role play. Jesse doesn't know this. Nobody has informed Jesse that this is all fantasy and role play. But Thomas feels that she'll never find out and she'll never get hurt. Thomas wrote a letter to himself and he kept this letter at work, in his locker at work. I don't know who has the balls to keep something like this in a public setting, but this is what the letter read. On January 2nd, 2006, Thomas Montgomery, 46 years old, ceases to exist and is replaced by an 18-year-old battle-scarred Marine. He has money in the bank. He's handsome. He's like a redheaded Harrison Ford. And in this letter, old Limpy D over here is manifesting that he now has a huge D. He's got this huge package in between his legs and he's not impotent anymore. And then in the letter, he wonders, when will this transformation take place? Listen, I am a manifesting bitch. I love a good manifestation. But come on, Thomas. Come on. Jesse is all Thomas can think about. Thomas is obsessed. Of course, his wife is starting to get a little suspicious over here, you know? He's like acting like a teenage boy that's in love. She's starting to catch on and she's starting to get a little worried. She keeps asking him, what's going on? Who are you talking to when you're on the computer? And he keeps lying to her. He's telling her, they're just my friend, Cindy, get away. And he is now starting to think, okay, my wife is on to me. This has to end. I have to stop this relationship right now or I'm going to have a lot of issues. He even started having actual health issues because he was so stressed out. He was having anxiety nonstop. But his wife is not, she's not believing him. She doesn't believe a word coming out of his mouth. And she starts snooping a little bit. And she does end up finding a package from Jesse to Tommy. She found the package with the red panties in it. You know, I hate the word panties. I don't like that I have to say it. What else would I say? Underwear? It doesn't sound as gross, so I guess I have to keep saying panties, but just so you guys know, I hate that word. Okay, so she finds the package with the red panties on it, and Cindy loses her damn mind. She finds out that this girl is 18, and now Cindy is freaking out on her husband. She's like, dude, you have a family. You have daughters. What are you doing? She gets so pissed and she says, why can't you talk to me? I'm right here in this house with you. Why are you having conversations with an 18-year-old girl when you have a wife sitting right here that wants to fix our marriage? And she's yelling at him, talk to me, talk to me. And he tells her, Cindy, I can't talk to you because you're always angry. Let's just take a moment here. I wonder why Cindy's always angry, Thomas. Think about it a little bit. Cindy's not going to stand for this shit. Cindy's going to shut this shit down right now. And she writes a letter to Jesse. Dear Jesse, enclosed, you will find a picture of my family. Let me introduce you to these people. The man in the center is Tom, my husband. There is no Tommy. He is taking advantage of you. You need to be much more cautious with your safety. You will be hurt by a man who has mastered the art of manipulation and lies. Do not trust words on a computer. Cindy Montgomery. Badass. She should have wrote, badass bitch, at the end of that letter. I just find it so interesting that Cindy doesn't even really seem angry at Jesse. She's angry at her husband, yes, 100%. But she's almost taking on like a motherly role when she writes to Jesse. She's like, girl, what are you doing? Where's your mom? You don't talk to people on the internet. You don't send them pictures of yourself. Of course, Jesse receives this letter and she is absolutely disgusted. She now sees the real Thomas. And in this photo, he's got his two daughters sitting on his lap and his wife standing by his side. Jesse is like, this is disgusting. We are done. I don't want to speak to you ever again. She did want to know why Tommy would lie to her. And Thomas didn't have a good reason for her. But Thomas says that he was very relieved at this point because he didn't have to talk to Jesse anymore and he didn't have to break it off because his wife did it for him. See, like, got a little theme going there. Looks like Thomas doesn't really know how to do anything for himself, especially break up with his 18-year-old online girlfriend. But things are only about to get way worse for Thomas because Thomas has a coworker named Brian. Brian is 26 years old. Brian Barrett was a college student going to school to become a teacher, and he worked part-time at the Dynabraid factory with Thomas Montgomery. Thomas and Brian work together. Thomas and Brian are good friends. They even play in the same online poker rooms. So Thomas has mentioned Tall Hot Blonde to Brian while they were at work. And when they're in the same rooms together, Brian has seen Tall Hot Blonde on the screen. So he knows what's going on. So one day, Brian is in one of these poker rooms, and Tall Hot Blonde, having just found out that her Tommy was a 46-year-old married man, decides that she's going to strike up a conversation with Thomas's coworker, Brian. Jesse is going to get a little bit messy. Twenty-six-year-old Brian Barrett was described by his father as a great kid. He was a 22-year-old, big, strong, happy young man. His entire life revolved around getting up every morning at 6:30, going to school until 3 o'clock, and then going to his job at the factory from 3 to 10 for a second shift. And this was all to afford to be able to go to school. On weekends, Brian and his best friend Joe would get together and do what all 22-year-olds do in Western New York. Find a place that serves chicken wings and maybe a beer and a pool table. Brian's screen name in these poker rooms was Beefcake, and so he starts talking to Tall Hot Blonde. She starts sending Brian all the same stuff that she sent Tommy, just verbatim, the flirty messages, the bikini pics. Jesse gets into it real quick, and she is real flirtatious. She sends a message that reads, "I'm taking my thong off, sitting down on my baby's lap, sliding onto something long and hard." And of course, this leads to the I love yous. These two start saying I love you very quickly. And Jesse knows Brian works with Thomas. She's doing this on purpose. And of course, this makes Thomas pissed. Thomas wants his fantasy back. He wants his girl back, and he gets it. He's not going to let Brian win. There is no way. So he starts talking to Jesse again. And at this point, Jesse's talking to Thomas and Brian. She's using Brian to get Thomas jealous and vice versa. It is just such a mess. So she tells Thomas that her and Brian actually sent each other videos. They went a step further than she ever went with Thomas. And this pisses Thomas off. He is now 100% not letting anyone have his girl. There is one night Thomas and Jesse are talking online, and Jesse writes to him. This is one of the, just weirdest, most disturbing little short conversations these two have. Jesse's writing to him, "Hey, can you do me a favor? Don't let Tommy die." And Thomas answers back, "He won't die as long as he's in your heart." And I must add in that this man who's 46 is using like "you are" instead of writing out the word "your." "He won't die as long as he's in your heart." It makes me gag. Ugh. So then he writes, "You're crying, aren't you?" I don't know why that little line that he writes just pisses me off so much. It's like, who do you think you are? You think you made that girl cry? "You're crying, aren't you?" That one just comes out of nowhere. She's like, "Of course I'm crying. I can't stop. I need my Tommy back. We can't let Tommy die." I'm just reading all of these messages and thinking, dude, you're like 50 years old. Will you just stop? Will you cut it out? Do you have something you need to do? Do you have any responsibilities you need to tend to? So Brian finds out about this. He finds out that Jesse's still talking to Thomas, and Brian goes to work and he tells everyone what is going on. He starts discussing this with everyone. And then he starts discussing all of this with Jesse because he's telling her, "So I just went to work today and I told everyone that Thomas was, you know, messing around with an 18-year-old girl and Thomas is married." I mean, Brian's single. Brian can do whatever he wants. He can go into work and tell everyone, "Hey, guess what Thomas did?" So Jesse's egging him on. She's telling him, "Yeah, you should go into work. You should tell everyone that Thomas did this because I'm pissed at him. You should make fun of him and have everyone else make fun of him." And Brian also starts bragging at work about how he's going to go meet Jesse. They made plans to meet up and he's going to West Virginia. And in Thomas's words, he says that Brian was saying he's going to meet this virgin that he met online and he's going to take her virginity. Okay, we don't really know if Brian said that. That's what Thomas said. So this pisses Thomas off beyond belief. And these two are arguing like two high school kids. And they're arguing online too, not only at work, but they get home and Thomas and Brian are arguing online. Thomas is saying things to him like, "I can't believe that you would choose her over our friendship." But Brian never does go to meet Jesse because Jesse stops talking to Brian. So Brian just says, "You know what? I'm out. Goodbye. You two have each other. I'm moving on with my life." And Jesse continues to keep talking to Thomas now. And their conversations just get progressively weird. Thomas is saying shit to her randomly. Like, he'll just DM her, IM her in the middle of the day and write, "You mean shit to me." Very aggressively. "You mean shit to me, girl." And Jesse would write back, "Then why are you talking to me?" Tommy says, "I still care for you, man. A little. But I want you devastated." A man just said to you, "I want you devastated," and then you continue to have a conversation with him? Okay. She says, "Well, come on, can we just start over as friends?" Can't. And then Tommy says, "Listen, I still feel Tommy in my heart. He's still here. We gotta keep this going." He literally said, "I still feel Tommy in my heart." And I imagine he said it the way that I just said it. So we're going to go with that. So since Tommy's veins are still pumping through Thomas's heart, he decides to start confiding in Jesse, and he's admitting to her that he hates Brian. He hates that Brian has had a relationship with Jesse. He can't stand the thought of the both of them in his head, and he writes, "You have turned my heart ice cold." He wrote that to Jesse. "I hate Brian with a passion, and for 10 cents, I would eliminate him. Payback is a motherfucker, Jesse. I am the ultimate weapon. I am a Marine. Let's just say your piece of shit boyfriend came within a pussy hair of dying." Those are Thomas's words, not mine. Excuse my language. Thank you. I would like to think at this point is when I would go to the police. I would say something. I would say, "Okay, listen, I got this list of text, DMs, IMs from this man. He told me he was 18, but he's not. He's 46. He also told me he wants to see me devastated. He also said he would take 10 cents to eliminate this guy that he works with." I mean, it goes on and on with this man. You would think that Jesse would say something to somebody. I mean, especially when Thomas writes to her, "He will pay in blood." I mean, Jesse gets off on this shit. She loves this. This is drama to her. She lives in her own little world. She doesn't have to really meet these guys if she doesn't want to. And this is fun for her, isn't it? Around this time, Jesse is trying to calm Thomas down a little bit. And she's trying to calm him down with her infamous sexual advances. She's telling Thomas that she aches for Tommy. And Thomas is replying with, "Well, you killed Tommy. You killed Tommy, but I would sell my soul to be Tommy. I want you so bad, Jesse. I want to hold you and kiss you." And Jesse replies, "Make love to me, Tommy." I feel like I'm recording an auto erotica book right now. Is that what they're called? Or romance novels? I feel like Tommy. Oh, God. Someone give a girl a contract up in here. So I planned on reading these IMs to you, but at this point, I'm a little grossed out just looking at them. I'll give you the gist. So they have sex. This is when Jessie loses her cyber virginity to Thomas. And a lot of these IMs, Thomas refers to his private part as the snake. He likes to rub the tip of his snake all over Jessie's body. You get the gist. And Jessie likes to respond with lots of, I don't want to read this part, but I have to because I think it's disgusting. She tells him to slide it in, and this little scummer says, no, first I want you to beg like a little girl. He said, beg like a little girl, the father of two girls. So Thomas thinks they're in love. He thinks everything is grand, everything's back to normal, but Jessie is flirting with more than just Thomas online. And Jessie can do what she wants. She's not married with two kids. She is having the time of her life in all of these chat rooms, and Thomas finds out about it. He finds out that Jessie's flirting with more than just him, and he writes to her. He's very angry. He is berating her. He asks her, do your panties get wet when you crush my feelings for you? Thomas threatens Jessie, saying that he's going to physically hurt her. Now he wasn't, you know, he was just threatening Brian before, but now he's telling Jessie if she didn't leave him alone, he was going to drive to her house and he was going to kill her. And if he didn't kill her, he was going to kill her mother because he wanted to take something away from her that she loved. But Jessie comes back at him and she says, well, you know what? Now that you said that to me, my mother would like to talk to you. And then Jessie's mother gets on that computer and she's like, you stay the hell away from my daughter. Do you hear me? You don't talk to my daughter anymore, Thomas. And he's like, fine, but you make sure that she stays away from me, lady. And it ends there. No, just kidding. A few weeks go by and Jessie's back in full effect. She's going after Thomas crazy again and he takes the bait. And Thomas is starting to go crazy because these mind games are too much for him. Everything is falling apart around him. And he finds out that Jessie is messaging Brian again. So Jessie has now created the love triangle again. It's back. It's back in full effect, just like Jessie is. And all hell breaks loose now because Thomas is beyond pissed that she's talking to Brian again. So he writes to her and he says, I'm not a fucking yo-yo for you to play with. You better be very afraid now. And Jessie should have taken that threat very seriously. And honestly, this time it does scare Jessie. She goes to Brian and she tells him, listen, Thomas is acting crazy. He's really pissed off and he threatened you. And I think you should take this threat seriously. So Brian says, well, what do you mean? Like, should I go to my boss? Should I tell somebody? Because he doesn't really talk to me at work. I mean, he tried to hit me with his car once, but he doesn't say much to me at work. He's kind of just been ignoring me. While Thomas is ignoring Brian, oh, he's not ignoring Jessie. No, he's going crazy. He's writing to her saying that he hopes that she gets gang raped. That, and in fact, the only way that he ever wants to see her is if she is being gang raped. That's the only way he wants to come across her. He tells her that she is nothing to him now. She is nothing but a lying whore. Now, we have to remember, Thomas is 50 years old, nearly 50. And he is saying this to an 18-year-old girl. He's going crazy. And the next day, after this conversation that they have, where he calls her a lying whore, tells her he never wants to see her unless you know what, he starts talking to her again online. She won't answer him, though. And since she's not answering, he keeps calling her a whore. It won't stop. She logs off, and that pisses him off because he can't get in contact with her now. So later that evening, right after this conversation happened with Jessie and Thomas, Brian is leaving work at 10 p.m. And he is walking to his truck in the parking lot that is barely filled. There's hardly anyone at the factory at this time. He's walking to his vehicle and somebody approaches him from behind. Brian gets inside of his vehicle, sits down in the driver's seat, and he is shot through the window 3 times. And Brian had no plans that weekend. He didn't have plans with friends. He didn't have anywhere he had to be. So his body was in that truck for 2 more days until more people arrived at work on Monday morning. Brian was found slumped sideways in the driver's seat of his truck, his arms at his side, and a hole in his neck, and he was covered with blood. they did notice that a passenger rear tire was flattened. So this was planned. This looks like somebody planned this attack. Thomas is the number one suspect very quickly, but police can't find him. So they figure, well, maybe he went to Virginia and he's after Jesse now. Because everyone in this factory knew the ongoing feud between Thomas and Brian. And police immediately suspect Thomas and they take his computer. They search all of his records on the computer. They're seeing all of these conversations. They're hearing about these fights these two were having from everyone at the factory. And now police realize that Brian and Thomas were involved in a love triangle with an 18-year-old girl from West Virginia named Jessie. So they need to track her down because if they can't find Thomas, Jessie could be in some very big danger. Police track Jessie down two different ways. They use her driver's license and they use her MySpace page. And they found out where she lived through those two things. So police are dispatched to Jessie's house and a lady answers the door. She answers the door and the officer says, "Hey, are you Jessie Sheeler?" She's like, "No, that's my daughter and she doesn't live here." And they're like, "Well, can we get her phone number?" And she said, "No, I don't have her phone number." And police are just like, "Wait a minute, so she's your 18-year-old daughter. You don't have her phone number?" And the officer says that this woman at the door, her eyes just started welling up with tears. You could see that she was about to cry. And just out of nowhere, this lady just cracks and says, "It's me. It's me. I'm Jessie. I've been using my daughter's pictures online to lure men." 46-year-old Mary Sheeler using her 18-year-old daughter as bait. Yeah, Jessie is real. Jessie is really a beautiful, athletic, gorgeous, blonde 18-year-old girl. And her mother, Mary Sheeler, is a 46-year-old catfisher. Absolute insanity. This mother, her daughter had no idea, not a clue, that her mother was basically stalking her. She was coming up behind her all the time, taking pictures from behind. A lot of these photos that Mary was sending to Thomas, to Brian, to God knows how many men online, her daughter didn't know those pictures were being taken. A lot of them were her daughter getting out of the swimming pool. One was a video going up her daughter's miniskirt. Lord knows how she got that video. Mary fills out a police report saying that Thomas called her and said, "Your boyfriend was easy to take care of." Thomas is arrested. He says he didn't do it. He didn't want to confess, and he didn't have to confess because there were no witnesses, and he didn't do it. No proof. What are you guys going to do? You can't hold me. At this point, Thomas has no idea that Jessie is not Jessie, that Jessie is a 46-year-old woman named Mary, the mother of Jessie. This man has no clue. Now, he's in a jail cell, and officers are speaking with him, and he's still not confessing, and they let him know. They're like, "Hey, just so you know that Jessie wasn't really talking to you, right? It was her mother." And they showed him a picture of Mary Sheeler, and they said that he didn't say a word, but the blood just drained from his face, and he just became as pasty as the walls behind him. Thomas won't confess. There's no witnesses, but they do confiscate his computer. And they also found this peach pit at the crime scene. And that peach pit had Thomas's DNA on it. A search of his house also found an M1A1 old military rifle. Now, Thomas once told a coworker that if he was ever going to kill someone, he was going to use this M1A1 rifle. And at the house, they find a photo of Cindy, Thomas's wife. But in the background of the photo, they can see that there is an M1A1 old military rifle case. And then when they take it to forensics, this photo, and they zoom in on it, they can see that there is the actual gun in the gun cabinet behind Cindy in this photo. So they've got a solid case. Thomas is arrested. Once Thomas is in jail, he tries to take his own life. He lost about 100 pounds while in jail, awaiting trial. He found a bunch of sleeping pills and he took all of them. And he said that he just wanted to take his own life. get this over with. So his attorney tries to get this insanity plea, but there just wasn't enough evidence for that. So Thomas says that he wants a trial. He wants to fight this. He definitely didn't do this. And his wife and his kids, they will tell you that he was home at the time of the shooting. But guess what? Cindy's not going to tell anyone that, because Cindy doesn't give a shit what happens to Thomas at this point. She's like, hell no, I am not walking into a courtroom and lying for the man that has been cheating on me, lying to me, and doing all of this with an 18-year-old girl. Guess what, Thomas? You're on your own. Cindy is like, this is all your fault. You were not home when that shooting happened. You need to go to prison, my guy. So then Thomas starts relying on the fact that he's going to have his kids testify. Well, then I'll just get my two little daughters to testify that I was home. And he's telling them on this recorded phone call, these little girls, listen, you have to say that daddy was home because you don't want daddy to go upstate, right? And they are crying. Like, they're being put in the middle of this situation. He's asking his two daughters to lie for him. But in the end, Thomas decides that he doesn't want to have his kids testify. He doesn't want to put them through that. So he ends up taking a plea deal and he pleads guilty to first-degree manslaughter. And he is sentenced to 20 years in prison at Attica. Mary Sheeler, who posed as her 18-year-old daughter, has never been criminally charged in this case. There's no law in New York State at the time of this crime. Thomas pulled the trigger. And in New York State, you would have to prove that Mary physically assisted him in committing this murder. Tim Sheeler is Mary's now ex-husband, and he says that his wife continued lying even after the murder, and she played it off as, you know what? I was just in chat rooms. He said that she lied and told him that she was only talking to other people in these chat rooms about poker, about the weather. Mary's ex-husband, Tim, said at the time, while they were still married and she was always online, he was wondering what she was doing. And he had no idea that she's posing as their daughter. He would say that he would try to leave for work in the morning and he would look over at her sitting on the couch with her little iPad and he would go, bye, I'm going to work, I'm going to miss you, I love you. And he said she would never take her face out of that iPad. He would never get a goodbye. He would never get her to look up at him and say, love you too, goodbye. She was just all consumed on this iPad and always online talking to people. Tim says that this was the woman that he thought he was going to die with. He loved his wife, and she's just always sitting over there on the couch with her laptop. Tim ends up divorcing Mary, thankfully. Good job, Tim. And the real Jessie, the real 18-year-old daughter of Mary and Tim, she has completely cut off communications with her mother. Mary Sheeler says she was bored. She was lonely. She was just trying to have some fun online. And she says that she only spoke with Thomas to make sure that he wasn't going to talk to any other young girls. So she's trying to say now that she posed as a young girl so that she could keep Thomas away from the young girls. I mean, she's just doing her part, you know? Oh, and be on the lookout for Mary's book, because Mary wants to write a book about the dangers of the internet. Maybe Kendra Licari and Mary Sheeler should get together and have tea every now and then. They can discuss what piece of shit mothers they both are. This case just gets so sensationalized because of all of the aspects. The fact that this turned out to be a catfish case. And a lot of the time when we talk about this case, Brian Barrett gets missed in all of it. A 26-year-old kid. I mean, he was in college to become a teacher. Just the potential that was taken away, a life that was taken away for absolutely no reason. Brian's father blamed himself. He blamed himself because he found Brian that job at the factory. He blamed himself because he chose to have a career where he fixed computers. He had PCs all over the house, and maybe if he didn't have a computer in the house, this wouldn't have happened to his son. You have these two grieving parents who did nothing wrong, blaming themselves, just trying to find answers, looking anywhere for answers. And they ask the question, what would have happened if just one person involved would have made a phone call? What if Mary Sheeler would have just come clean? She would have just stopped this. She would have just cut it off with Thomas and Brian. She knew how angry Thomas was getting. He was sending legit threats. He was telling her what he was going to do. I'll leave you with Brian's mother's words. She asks, how could someone do something so horrible? Her actions led to my greatest sorrow, the loss of my son. Stay safe and stay paranoid.